Welcome to the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, where it's all about slashing your debt, slashing your taxes, and creating a liberated lifestyle. And now, your host, who met his wife while training for the 400 meters in Seattle and is eating gluten-free whilst lusting after bread, Dave Denniston.
My name is Dave Denniston, and welcome back to the latest episode of the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast. Well, physicians today, they are working so hard. Can you agree with that? And in the midst of a grueling work schedule, our families can be forgotten. And unfortunately, this leads to doctors as well as dentists having some of the highest divorce rates in our country. And in my book, The Freedom Formula for Physicians, I talk about one of the biggest mistakes that many physicians make is this lack of work-life balance and not being able to make the effort to pour time, to pour energy into their relationships and their marriages. And this can be so hard to put together. And that's why I thought I would bring as a guest Julia Orlando. Julia serves as the Director of Clinical Services for the Soteel Center of Resilience and the Center for Physician Resilience in Davidson, North Carolina, where she provides counseling and life coaching to a diverse client base, including children, adults, and adolescents, and families. And actually, she lectures nationally on work-life issues for busy medical families, and she serves as an invited columnist in the AMA publication Physician Family Magazine. She offers counseling tailored to the needs of busy physicians, as well as retreats and time-intensive enrichment services for individuals, couples, and families. Well, welcome, Julia.
Thanks, Dave. Thank you for having me.
Oh, so glad you're here. This is going to be great. Well, let's just kick this off. Tell us first a bit about you. I mentioned in the introduction, you're the Director of Clinical Services. What I didn't mention is that you actually work with your parents, who are authors and speakers. Tell us a bit more about your journey and how you've gotten to where you are now.
Yeah, oddly enough, I come from a family of therapists, which is probably a pretty scary idea for most people, but I grew up, my parents, Wayne and Mary Soteel, were in private practice in Winston-Salem, North Carolina for 30 plus years, and they really devoted their practice to promoting resilience for physicians and their families. So I grew up with an idea that I wanted to go into mental health in some capacity, and started my career working primarily with survivors of trauma, specifically sexual abuse and sexual assault, and also, and adolescents with sexual behavior problems, and knew that eventually I wanted to go into private practice, and it just kind of worked out over the past couple of years that we all, my parents and my sister even, who was also in the mental health field, decided to go into practice together here in Davidson, and we established the Center for Resilience and Center for Physician Resilience. So it's been cool journey.
I can't even imagine working with my parents. I think we'd drive each other nuts.
I know. The good thing is, I'll say this, and I won't tell them when this is airing so they won't hear it, but they travel a lot, so they're not here a lot.
There you go. You get to run the place.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's actually been really cool working with them. They have so much knowledge and information, and we have very different approaches and perspectives, which can be interesting. We do a lot of intensives with families and work as kind of a team for therapy, which is an interesting approach, and it's neat to see how we do things differently.
So has the practice always focused on physicians, or how has that changed over time?
Yeah, well, so way back in the day, my dad, Wayne, was on the faculty at what was the Bowman Gray School of Medicine, at basically the medical school for Wake Forest University. And through that role, he started seeing in therapy medical students, and which kind of grew to he and my mom also seeing for therapy other physicians within the organization. And they ultimately became kind of like the EAP for the medical school. So they worked with lots of physicians in their families and became kind of the primary people in Winston-Salem for treating families, medical families. And then that has grown now to more physician leadership coaching, coaching for issues of professionalism in the medical workplace, and more consulting around the country that they do with hospital systems. And that we've started working, consulting with hospital systems that are having kind of bigger, more macro issues. So it's grown from there, but it's always focused on physician families.
Well, let's chat a bit about physicians and marriage. So with seeing so many different physicians and hospital systems, what are you guys seeing out there today?
Yeah, you know, it's no secret, I think, that medical families face a tremendous amount of challenges and stress, to say the least. Today, what's interesting about today's cohort of physicians is one of the newer challenges is that more often now there are dual earners in the family. So more traditionally, we thought of kind of the physician and his wife who stayed at home and managed the household, and which is a tremendous job in and of itself, but that was kind of a clear division of labor, I guess. Now, that's really not the norm anymore. 50% or so of physician spouses work outside the home for 30 plus hours. So the challenges that they're facing are very different. You know, the challenges of work-life balance are very different. I think that today there is much more pressure to achieve that idea of balance, whatever that means. And we pressure ourselves to be perfect wherever we are. You know, I have to be the perfect wife. I have to be the perfect father. I have to be the perfect physician. And that's overwhelming. As medicine gets more complicated and more advanced, the demands get more complicated and more advanced. So if you add into that, that now you have two people working outside the home oftentimes, it's more complicated. And an even more challenging dynamic that we are seeing more often is the doctor and her husband, or the doctors who both work. And that just, you know, makes things more complicated in a lot of ways.
I can't even imagine with trying to figure out shifts and when you have a family and little kids. And with me and my wife, she works part-time, and it's hard enough just trying to figure out who's going to pick up who when. And
it's a big stress, I think, and it's hard to manage. And for women in medicine, you know, that idea of working toward balance, I think, is particularly intense. and being able to be good in every sphere is sort of tenfold for women in medicine.
Well, and it seems to me that, in my opinion, I mean, physicians are best and brightest. You know, they've been through so much schooling. They're often the top of the class over the years. And they have this double type A personality where success is embedded in them. And I totally relate to that, where everything you do, you expect to be successful. And when you have the vision of that white picket fence and the family, and you want everything to be just perfect, and to not have that time as a woman, I got to imagine, is a huge emotional pull. You go back and forth between the vision you have as being a mom as well as the vision for your career.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, just sort of stereotypically, society tends to support more the idea of a man doing what he needs to do to get out and make money and support the family. And if that means you miss some soccer games, then you miss some soccer games. Women typically are not supported in that same way. It's more of a you're abandoning your role kind of struggle, I think, a lot of times. Whether that's really what is happening, whether that's really what people are saying, or if that's self-inflicted, that's a struggle that a lot of women in medicine deal with.
Well, plus you imagine all the medical school debt that gets there. Well, anyhow, Yeah. I ran into you through one of your articles through that magazine, which I thought was really great, and it was titled More Than Married. It was last year that came out, and you had listed three statements, and I was just thinking of clients as I read these. Here they were: I will make more time once I'm done with the residency.
Right.
I will take care of my personal health once the kids are older. Another one was, sure, I'd like to pursue my own business, but I think it makes more sense to wait until we have more time. We barely see each other as it is. So tell us about some of the clients you've seen. Give us a couple of stories of what physicians are going through today.
Yeah, you know, it's so fascinating. You know, I feel honored to be able to work with these families, and we see some of the same stuff over and over again. This idea of waiting until, you know, we're going to wait until X happens, and then we're going to be happy. We're going to wait until we're done with residency, and we're going to have more time. The reality is that's just not true. You know, training is grueling without question, but the idea of postponing happiness until some phase of life is over really sets you up for unhappiness. I worked recently with a really young couple who the husband was in his second year of residency, and they came to me just sort of defeated. You know, how is this hard already? Residency was supposed to be easier than medical school, you know, and now this is harder than anything we've done before. So surely it's going to get better once we're out of residency, but I don't know where we're going to live, and we just had a baby, and you know, who's going to help me with the baby if he's always at work? And, you know, in the midst of all this, they had completely lost their connection. They had completely lost sight of what brought them together in the first place. And it was this idea of we're gonna get to that when things are easier. And the sad truth is you will not get to that if you don't take time to get to that now. So one of the biggest tasks for medical families and couples in situations like this is finding ways to reconnect and to kind of get back in touch with why you're here in the first place. Why did you choose each other? And let's talk about that and figure out how to really feel that again, despite how busy you are.
So how did they go about that? You know, what was your prescription to help them get back to that core of their relationship?
Well, I think so fondly of this couple because they were both very high-achieving people and both very sort of black and white thinkers about things. You know, they wanted to have a formula for how to fix this. And part of what we did was just like they scheduled. These folks were scheduled like I had never seen. You know, so organized and so regimented about everything. We included time for connection in that schedule. To some people, that probably sounds really cold and formulated, but for them, it worked because they needed to have it written down. It needed to be a concrete thing. Okay, at 5 o'clock, we are going to have 20 minutes to sit down and at least look at each other and talk to each other with no technology, with no interference. You know, work can wait 20 minutes. Because this is the time that we are going to reconnect. Little things like that make a big difference.
I can so relate to that. I don't know if I told you this story or not. My wife and I, the reason I started working with physicians was that due to our birth of our youngest daughter who came out in the world at 23 weeks gestationally.
Yes.
It was only 12.4 ounces.
That is
and
amazing.
We're in the NICU for 4 or 5 months. And then she ended up coming home on oxygen, and thank goodness she's relatively healthy today and doing
yeah.
wonderful. You would never know it, but that whole time period, that whole first year, we just grew apart, and
mm-hmm.
everything just seemed like work. And I know
mm-hmm.
a lot of physicians can relate to this,
mm-hmm.
that when it just seems like relationship is work, it can be so hard. So what I had to do in my schedule. Yeah, you know, my wife and I got almost to a breaking point. You know, I had to put in little things into my schedule once a week just something to show her I care. It might be a little love note I find on the internet. I spend 10 minutes trying to find something. I send her something. And just those little touches like that I put in my calendar to let her know, hey, I'm thinking of you, has helped so much in our relationship.
That's wonderful. I mean, I think in a weird way it's so well-intended that the first thing that we lose is the connection to the person we love the most. It's almost like you're a sure thing. Like, I know you're here, and I know I'm here for you. I know we're not going anywhere. But because of that, it can be low on the priority list of things that I need to pay attention to today. And honoring how important that is in little ways like that means so much to just let the person know, oh, okay, you are thinking about me. You know, that's such a wonderful energy to carry with you throughout the day. So it's nothing crazy. You know, there's no big mystery about it. It's just finding what works for you to kind of reestablish connection.
And so let's talk about burnout. You know, burnout and what a lot of people are calling assembly line medicine, working for the big company. What does that look like in the physician patients that you're treating?
Yeah, I know. Burnout, you know, we are really dealing with higher rates today than ever across specialties in medicine. From our research, we found that approximately 46% of physicians are burned out. And just to add to the complication, about 30% of physicians' spouses are also burned out. So, so it's not just, you know, the physicians burned out. It's everyone kind of burned out. And I want to talk a little bit about what we mean by burnout. I think that it's a phrase that gets tossed around a little bit today when it's not always applicable. So for our work, when we are identifying someone who's really dealing with burnout, we consider three key components. The first is emotional exhaustion. And this isn't just I'm tired and I don't want to get up and go to work. It's I really resent the routine demands that come with the role that I have to fill today, whether that's my role at work or my role at home. You know, I can't seem to get it together to re-energize myself to go and do what I need to do. The second factor is depersonalization, kind of acting as if I don't care. And this is where we see a lot of physicians get into trouble. You know, many physicians who are referred to us for mandated coaching services are sent to us because of complaints related to depersonalization. So a family who complains that a doctor is cold or distant, doesn't take time to talk to them, doesn't take time to connect with them, a nursing staff who complains that a physician screams at them too quickly, whatever the case is, oftentimes they're mandated for some kind of coaching. And when we get down to what's really going on, very rarely is this truly a doctor who is just kind of a jerk and bad at dealing with people. More often than not, this is someone who is basically traumatized by everything that he or she has been through, everything that he or she has dealt with through, from training on. And depersonalization is a defense mechanism. You know, this is a way that I can disconnect from how sad I am or how angry I am or how hurt I am by all that's happened. And then the third aspect is a diminished sense of personal accomplishment. So I never feel like I'm meeting expectations, my own or others, no matter where I am. So if I'm at work, I don't feel good about how good I'm doing, and I know that no one else is approving of what I'm doing. If I'm at home, I don't feel good about how connected I am with my family, and I sense that other people aren't happy with that either because, you know, my partner's looking at me out the corner of his eyes when I'm distracted by my phone or whatever the case is. It's constantly feeling like you're not accomplishing what you need to accomplish.
Wow.
So those are kind of the main things we consider when we look at whether or not someone is burned out.
Well, in the same article that I was talking about, and I think this kind of addresses that, and maybe you agree, you listed 15 different ways on how to get happy.
Yeah.
So tell us two or three of your favorites and how you've seen physicians overcome this horrible issue that they're dealing with.
Yeah. I don't know. I like all of them. But, you know, some of the ones that I've seen kind of most profoundly affect people, I think. The idea of positive relationships. So enhancing positive relationships, making time to be sociable, participating in friendships that are important to you, and keeping your relationships positive. Now, obviously, with busy families and busy people, this does not mean I expect that people will go out and, you know, join social clubs and meet a bunch of new people and become very active socially. But honoring the relationships in your life that are important and doing something to actively participate in them, even if it is sending someone an email, you know, a friend you haven't spoken to in a while, something that gives you kind of a positive boost, a positive sense of connection with someone is really important. But another aspect of this is keeping your relationship positive. I have a physician now who I'm working with, and one of the main things that he is working to advocate for is not surrounding himself by too many negative people. The hospital system where he works, there's a lot going on. There's a lot of unhappiness and mistrust between physicians and administration. And many of his coworkers spend a lot of time commiserating about how terrible it is. And he struggles with that. It really, really affects him negatively to be around that too much. So we are working to find ways for him to set boundaries with his coworkers so that he's not, you know, just sort of sucked into that cycle of negativity. So working to advocate for yourself that you're not drawn into other people's stuff.
So give us a way that someone would do that. So help. Let's say you're in that negative situation. How do you handle that? What do you say? What do you do?
Well, for him, it's been interesting because all of the, in his department, they're all in one office. And so it's a challenge because it's not like he can go shut himself in his own office because he shares an office with folks. So we have had to find creative ways, you know, putting in earphones and listening to music without seeming too rude to his coworkers, or finding times of the day when he knows that they are not necessarily going to be in the office, when he can go in and work on the stuff that he needs to work on in the office, but also just limiting how much he is in there at his desk participating in it. Once we kind of really started sorting through it, he realized that he was not just getting drawn into it, but leading some of those negative conversations. So him managing how much he allows himself to initiate that kind of let's commiserate about how terrible this is. I think one of the easiest ways is to just draw your attention to it. Once you start being aware of it, then you can work on ways to set boundaries around it. Oftentimes we're not even aware of how much time we spend thinking or speaking negatively. It's just become habit. You know, so just some simple kind of intention toward not doing it can go a long way.
Awesome. Well, you know, I personally believe successful people learn from their mistakes, but super successful people learn from others' mistakes. And making marriages work is work. And in the article, you list 5 different ways to strengthen marriages that I thought were really awesome. So what are 1 or 2 or 3 lessons you'd like to pass on to physician business owners and physicians in general?
Yeah, I think one of the most impactful things that I've seen is when people find ways to honor each other's roles and contributions in the family. And this is particularly important for physicians and their families. It could be very easy to get sucked into feelings of resentment toward medicine because medicine becomes this entity that takes from your family if you allow it to. So finding a way to honor the fact that there is a physician in the family and how wonderful and honorable it is that he or she has chosen a life in medicine, but then also the partner of a physician, honoring the challenges that come with that and honoring all the different roles that he or she plays as a partner to a physician. And the most important piece of this, I think, is speaking kindly about one another to and in front of your children. So, you know, being purposeful in your attempts to honor each other. We have a family that we worked with a year or so ago who sent us this adorable picture of the mother and their three kids in like hospital gowns and masks that they sent to the physician husband when he was on call. And the message was, you know, when dad's on call, we're all on call and we support you. And, you know you can't be here with us, but we love you and we support you and we're in this with you. Little things like that are huge. They're hugely impactful. This, I think, was probably more prevalent before, but I still see this with some of my couples I work with. Spouses of physicians who don't work outside of the home sometimes struggle with the idea of being just a physician spouse and needing some other identity than that. So finding a way for the spouse first to do something that makes them feel accomplished, whether that's a career outside of the home or if it's the way you manage your home. Connecting to a feeling of accomplishment is really important, and then that the partner acknowledges that as a real accomplishment is also tremendously important.
So it could be a passion of some sort. Like I know my
Absolutely.
Wife is super, super passionate about music, and yeah. so it's not always easy that you don't get to spend a whole lot of family time, but I guess it could be supporting them by letting them spend time on that rather than and have to sacrifice some of that family time maybe so that way they
Absolutely.
Can have that passion.
Right, right. Yeah, you know, it's worth verbalizing appreciation to and about one another. You know, even if you think it all the time, it makes such a big difference if you say it. Things like that. Kind of tip that I think is really effective is honoring the rituals that exist in your family, not eliminating rituals because someone's working. So I think when schedules get crazy and busy, some of the first things to go are more ritual-like behaviors that we have, whether it's that we sit down every Tuesday night and play checkers. Or, you know, we order pizza every Friday night and have pizza night. Things that even seem simple, it's important to honor them as rituals and kind of raise them to the level of this is something that our family intentionally does together. Honoring that really promotes positivity in a cool way and boosts the overall morale of a family, knowing that no matter what, we are going to at least work to come together and do this. And honor that this is something we enjoy doing together.
And what if you end up missing that ritual because you're on call or, you know, they end up getting pulled another direction and that spouse has that sense of disappointment and maybe even anger that you missed that ritual. How do you handle that?
Absolutely. And inevitably that will happen, right? Just whether in medicine or not, inevitably things come up that will take away those moments. But if what you've done is consistently work to let each other know this is important to me, you're important to me, I enjoy it when we can do this. When it doesn't happen, it's a little bit less insulting, I guess. You know, if all week long you go without connecting to each other, without looking at each other, without speaking to each other because things are so busy, and you're banking on this one 30-minute time slot we have to sit down and have pizza together, and then that doesn't happen, it's much more difficult to say, oh, okay, that didn't happen. But if you found ways to connect to one another, to appreciate one another throughout the week, even if it is a little sticky note that says, I love you and I miss you, it's easier to tolerate the disappointments when they happen.
It's kind of like that analogy I use sometimes that you want to make little deposits in the bank. So that way you
absolutely.
Can withdraw from it.
Yeah, absolutely. Perfect analogy, yeah.
Well, what are some good resources? We're starting to run out of time here. What are some good resources, Julia, regarding strengthening ourselves as well as our marriages that you would recommend, whether it's to residents or fellows or practicing physicians, maybe some good books, some good videos online that they could check out?
Yes. Well, not to make a shameless family plug here, but my parents have written some great books specifically about managing resilience and happiness through medicine. My dad and one of his colleagues just wrote a book, Building Resilience in Neurosurgery Residents. And then my parents wrote a book called The Medical Marriage and Marriage Skills for Busy Couples. So both of those books are specifically targeted toward medical couples and how to manage and promote resilience and happiness through a life in medicine. But in general, I think Sue Johnson is a clinician who has written several books and she's created sort of a therapeutic approach for couples counseling. Anything by her is amazing and very accessible, very easy to apply, I think. And the same is true for John Gottman. John and Julie Gottman are kind of gurus of couples counseling, and they have a ton of great advice.
Awesome, awesome. Well, there's so much that we could cover here that we just don't have time. We don't have all day.
I know.
What are some closing thoughts that you want to make physicians and folks that are listening to this aware of?
You know, I am so happy that podcasts like this exist because, you know, it saddens me how much physicians and their families are not taken care of today in our society. And so, you know, on behalf of those of us who are working to do that, I hope that this can be helpful to some people. I apologize that we are not more proactive in taking care of the people who take care of us, because physicians and their spouses and their families are such an important part of all of our lives. And I don't think we acknowledge that enough. So I'm grateful to folks like you who take the time to do that, and I'm glad to be able to try to help in some way.
Well, thank you so much for being with us, Julie. This was just great. If people have more questions, how can they reach out? How can they get in contact with you?
Sure. So the easiest way is probably to go to our website, which is sotile.com. And all of the ways to contact us are linked on that website.
Okay, awesome. So it's kind of like Sotile is what I often want to say. It's how you spell it. But it's Sotile, SOTILE.com.
That's right. It looks like Sotile.
Okay. Awesome. Well, if you are a physician, you're listening to this, or you're someone else servicing physicians, and you want to tell your story grappling with tough issues like this one, you want to get up on the soapbox for a few minutes, I'd love to share it too in the next Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast. Make sure to contact me at dave@daviddeniston.com or on my website, drfreedompodcast.com. For the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, this is Dave Deniston. Thanks so much for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and check in again soon. Have a good one.